Ready? Okay, Tabura number 89, the Dayan's Desk. See everybody. So I thought I would speak about the concept of Pshara, which is sort of a basic one in terms of a Beis Din jurisdiction, that Batei Din try to decide cases in accordance with Pshara, but Pshara is a difficult term to define, first of all, so I thought we would spend some time maybe defining the word. What does Pshara mean? When we say the Batei Din try to decide cases in accordance with Pshara, what authority does Beis Din have to decide cases in accordance with Pshara, which sounds like it's not quite the strict standard of judgment, of din, of deciding a case according to strict Jewish law, according to a strict halacha. So why should a Beis Din decide cases in accordance with a Pshara, which is some looser standard, whatever it is, as opposed to a din? What made me inspired to speak about this topic was that we recently had a conference in New Jersey that was sponsored by the Beis Din of America, where I recently was appointed the Segan Av Beis Din, the new Av Beis Din of the Beis Din of America, is Rabbi Mordechai Willig Shlita. And to celebrate his appointment, they had this whole conference, and we had Rav Asher Weiss speak and Rav Herschel Schechter speak. And the topic that both Rav Asher Weiss Shlita and Rav Schechter Shlita chose to speak about was this topic of Pshara. So it kind of made me realize that maybe there's some confusion about this topic. Maybe there's a need to elaborate upon it, to elucidate it a little bit. So I decided that I would speak about Pshara from a practical perspective. How do we implement Pshara? It's sometimes translated as compromise, that a Beis Din tries to bring parties to some sort of a compromise. Sometimes it's translated as equity, that a Beis Din tries to decide cases in accordance with not just strict justice, but also principles of equity, what's fair and just under the circumstances. What further confuses this concept is that there seem to be two different standards of Pshara. There's Pshara, and then there's Pshara Krova L'din. Pshara Krova L'din is not necessarily a concept that you'll find discussed in the Gemara per se, but it means that you try to have, what did they have, Reese's peanut butter cups, where they discovered that if you mix the chocolate with the peanut butter, it tastes really good, and they made it into a lovely dish. I can't take credit for it. It's a different spelling of Reese, although my wife does make very good peanut butter cups of her own. But the idea is that you intermingle din, the strict justice, with Pshara, with equitable considerations, and you have some sort of a judgment that approaches strict justice, but it's just maybe like a tad adjusted for purposes of causing the judgment to be one that will facilitate a greater sense of peace and harmony. That's Pshara Krova L'din. So let's speak about the sources and origins of Pshara, how this became desirable in our jurisprudence, in our judicial tradition. And it starts really with a pasuk in the Torah, in Parshas Veschanim, Asisa Yashabet Be'aratov B'nei Hashem. Supposed to do what is just and upright in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is yasher, what is straight, is not always identical with what is tov, with what is necessarily going to be the most beautiful and the best result, as Rav Asher Weiss pointed out. And we're told you have to kind of intermingle the yasher together with the tov. And Rashi comments on HaYasher VeHaTov, Zu Pshara. This is actually a reference to Pshara Lefnim Mishuras Adin, to go above and beyond the letter of the law. Two people have a dispute, and one person is entitled to $100, but if they will be a little bit forgiving of the other party to say, you know, you really owe me $100, but I'll be lenient on you this time around, I'll go easy on you that you only have to give me, let's say, $80, so the person will get most of the benefit of what he's entitled to, the claimant. And based on making a little bit of a compromise, based on going above and beyond the letter of the law, that will enable the other party's life to be easier. and for the relationship between the parties to be better. So sometimes it's better to give up a little bit, to be what we call mevater. You give up a little bit of your claim for the purpose of going the Pnim Mishuras to Daniel. You have two parties. One party, Reuben, is convinced that he's 100% right, and Shimon's convinced he's 100% right. And you give, each one gives a little bit. They go above and beyond the letter of law. It happens to foster peace and harmony. The Ramban, his commentary says, he said there really even two separate concepts. There's going above and beyond the letter of the law, and then there is some sort of idea of pshara, that maybe that pshara is perhaps something which is consistent with the actual letter of the law, that you're always supposed to do pshara, that that's included within the Torah's mandate of what is appropriate when you are resolving a dispute. Now, if you think about it, there are two different ways that you can resolve a dispute in a way in which there's going to be compromise between the parties. One way is that the parties mediate a settlement. They negotiate a settlement between themselves, and they work things out by each one giving up a little bit from their claim. We do that all the time when we're mediating disputes between parties, and that's one version of pshara. But then, according to Torah law, we really have the second version of pshara, which is very, very important to understand, and that is a pshara which is imposed by the Beis Din itself. The parties are not negotiating a settlement between themselves. They're saying to the Beis Din, they're saying to the court, you decide the dispute, you decide our case, and we will accept whatever decision you hand down, where there is some sort of notion, the way that the commentaries understand this desideratum that is expressed by the Torah, there is some sort of a notion that it's appropriate, even for the Beis Din, to decide the case and impose a decision upon the parties in accordance with the pshara. But does the Beis Din have the right to do that if the parties haven't agreed to it? So that's a further discussion. It's interesting, the Baal HaTurim, on the very first pasuk of Mishpatim, which speaks about how you're supposed to adjudicate cases in front of the Jewish law judges, Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lipneihem, says that Mishpatim, the word Eha Mishpatim, Ve'ela Ha Mishpatim, can be understood as an acronym for our very strong preference to decide cases according to pshara. It wouldn't necessarily occur to a person as a natural acronym, but he says, Hadayan mitzuva she yaseh pshara terem yaseh mishpat. That the judge, and that adds up to hamishpatim, the judge is commanded by the Torah to try to broker a compromise prior to deciding a case according to strict Torah law. So where does the word pshara come from? Yes, Ira, question.
Does that in any way homiletically dovetail to the concept of what we daven for in terms of being judged barachamim as opposed to being the did?
Some of the Mefarshim say that. They say that the idea is that we try to emulate the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we want to act towards each other the way that we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to act towards us, right? Mahu chanun apatachanun, mahu vachum apatachanun. Just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu treats us with mercy, we should treat each other in the same fashion. We should treat each other the way we want a Kodesh Baruch Hu to manifest his attributes upon us. So if we are going to judge each other according to strict justice, so then we better be prepared for strict justice from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And if we may not be so perfect ourselves, we want a Kodesh Baruch Hu to be nice towards us, so then maybe we should give up a little bit of our claims that we have towards other people as well. So you certainly find that discussed in the Poskim as a possible source for this idea. The Shvus Yaakov, yes. Oh, I thought you were raising, okay. The Shvus Yaakov says, where does the word pshara come from? It says, Peshu Lashon Poshrin. The Shvus Yaakov Reisher, says that Pesher comes from the word Poshrin, which means lukewarm. You have lukewarm water, it's not too hot, it's not too cold. It's like, you know, kind of like little baby bear water. It's just right. The water is just the right temperature. It's not going to hurt anybody, not going to sting them, not going to chill them. And the idea might be that you are not going to go to one extreme or the other. So the Shrus Yaakov has a very curious comment that he makes. He says, "Gutamin and Dayane Chatzatzta." Like, for example, we have an expression in the Gemara in Baba Basra, which is source hay, Dab Kuf Lomet Lam again, Gimel Amud Beis, that speaks about Dayane Chatzatzta. Somebody said that they're going to give away all the possessions to a certain person who was eligible of inheriting them. And then they said, and after that person passes away, it should go to some other person who was not in their line of inheritance. So question is, what should be the proper din in this particular case? So one of the Amoraim thought that just like the first person had the right to collect, the second person had the right to collect. So the response that the other Amora, Rava, said was, Dayanei the Chatzasta Hachi Dayni. That's the way that Dayanim, who are Dayanei Chatzasta, judge cases, that they just say, oh, this one has a claim and that one has a claim, so you know what, we're just going to divide it in half. But it wasn't a complimentary comment. It was a derogatory comment. It was saying that the judges who don't know what they're doing, they just think, oh, these two ladies are fighting over a baby, I'll split the baby in half. They forget that Shlomo HaMelech threatened to split the baby in half, but didn't actually split the baby in half. You're not supposed to always just to split the claim in half. Somebody comes along, Reuven comes along, with a completely baseless claim against Shimon. Oh, Shimon owes me $1 million. And Shimon says, I never agreed to any kind of obligation where I would owe him even a single penny. So do you think that it would really be justice for Dayan to say, oh, let's just split the claim in half, so Shimon only has to pay $500,000. That wouldn't always be very just if Reuven has no basis for his claim whatsoever. So the idea of splitting things in half is not always the best solution if you're trying to arrive at an equitable resolution. So the Shmos Yaakov presumably is talking about a case where, let's say, both parties have an equally valid claim, and I can't really decide more in favor of one or the other. We generally say in Jewish jurisprudence, Hamotzi mechavero lav araya, that if I want to exact money from somebody else, the burden of proof is upon the plaintiff to take money away from somebody else. And we have a machlokis in a number of places in the Gemara between the Chachamim and Sumchus. If you have two parties with an equally valid claim, but one of them already is muksak, one of them is already holding the money, so Chachamim say the one who's holding the money gets to keep the money. And Sumchus says, no, they each have an equally valid claim, mamon amutzav esafek chokin, so therefore we're going to split it 50-50. But we don't hold like Sumchus. Nonetheless, the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis points out that when neither party is holding the money and they both have an equally valid claim, you had, for example, a man who died ostensibly without any children so that his wife would then be susceptible to Yibum, to marrying the brother of the man who died, and the man who died would then inherit the husband's estate as well. And the wife gets married to the brother, but doesn't wait 3 months like she's supposed to. And then a child is born, and we don't really know whether the child was the child of the first man who died, and she was already pregnant, or of the second man. And now some money comes into the estate of the man who died. And the son says, well, I was really the son of the man who died. I just was born posthumously. I was born afterwards. And the Yavam says, no, you're my son. I was the one who got your mother pregnant, and you're my son, and therefore I have the right to inherit my brother as the Yavam. So they both have equally valid claims. Like one of them might be right, the other one might be right, and neither one is holding the money. So the Gemara says, you know what you do in that case? You split it 50-50. That you could have a case, and Tosas points out that everybody would agree, both the Chachamim and Sumchus would agree in such a case when nobody was holding the money, and they both have equally valid claims, so you split it 50-50. So there may be cases where each one has an equally valid claim, so that it would be appropriate to just actually split the claim in half. But not in every single case. So the Shmos Yaakov says, yes.
How would the halacha change in the light of technology and advances that exist in society and knowledge that didn't exist in the time of Gemara?
So if you have more of an ability nowadays based on technology to figure out who really is the father, so that could really make a difference. But if all else being equal, or else being, you know, basically, you know, 50-50, which is equal, and if you don't have the technology to be able to determine that one is more correct than the other, so sometimes splitting 50-50 will actually make sense. But it's a good question. So says the Shmos Yaakov that it doesn't always mean that you're going to split 50-50. He says that Mikol Malkum, look at the second line of Source Dal, Yesh Rishus Biyad HaPashra, and the one who is deciding the case, according to Pshara, can Lassos Tefimos HaDrav and the Pashra Binayim, can make a compromise or some sort of intermediate solution, Kifiros Enei HaDayin. That's the idea that sometimes the Dayan has to exercise what's called judicial discretion. actually, Sadi Dover Achar Echad Mehan Yotze Mechaveiro. But he shouldn't be prejudicial to one party. If one party doesn't have a greater claim than the other, he shouldn't show favoritism to one side more than the other, because the idea is, says the Shus Yaakov Inyan, Shiyaseh Sholem Bein Atzdadim. It's an idea that you're going to have a din of Sholem. You're supposed to have a judgment which is made of a peace. So what's the nature of this judgment which is predicated upon peace? If you look at the Gemara that's cited in Sur Zion, Maseches Sanhedrin Da Bavim and Aleph, so the rules of Pshara are derived to a certain degree from the rules of a regular court case that's decided according to strict judgment. In terms of, do you require three judges? Is one judge enough? So we derive from what's required in a regular case. Whatever is required in a regular case is required in a case of Pshara. So this is what led Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, a Sechet Tzadik Levacha, to his conclusion based on that Gemara and based on lots of other sources. He says that really what Pshara is, when it's imposed by the Beis Din, when a Beis Din is deciding a case in accordance with the Pshara, what it really is, it's a regular Psak Din. It's a regular Psak Din. It's not just some sort of a negotiation where the Beis Din is involved, but it's an actual Psak Din. It's viewed as an actual court judgment, but it's a court judgment which is in the form of Lifnim Mishuras Adin. It's in the form of going above and beyond the letter of the law in order to do what is fair and just and equitable under the circumstances. He often equated it with the word Yosher, from Sisa Yosher V'Tov. The word Yosher, Yosher, that is kind of a combination of Yosher and Tov, that it's what's just and proper under the circumstances. And in fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lama Beis and Beis, it's somewhere in the sources, we'll get to it a little bit later, hopefully, says that the reason that the word tzedek is repeated in the pasuk, right? We have this slogan that is emblazoned on the wall of the courtroom in the Chicago Rabbinical Council, if you ever want to come and visit. So not everybody wants to come and visit because we're afraid that we'll lock the doors and, you know, they'll be trapped in some sort of a court case. But you could just come and visit, and you'll see that emblazoned on the wall behind the judge's bench is the pasuk, or the excerpt from the pasuk, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice, pursue it, right? So why does it say tzedek twice? Because it's a catchy slogan. The Torah is not about catchy slogans. The reason it says it twice is, well, one interpretation is holek hacha beis din yafeh, go after a good beis din, like hopefully the Chicago Rabbinical Council. But another interpretation is echad ledin ve'echad lepshara, that there's a form of judgment which is in accordance with strict law, and then there's a form of judgment, a form of a psak din, of a decision of the Beis Din that will be in accordance with Pshara, in accordance with these principles of equity and compromise and so forth. So we see that it's actually derived from the Torah, that this is a type of a Psak Din. Not only that, but if you take a look at Source Ches tells us that there is a three-way machlokis, between a different Tanaim as to whether the idea of Pshara, the Beis Din deciding according to Pshara, is an Isser. They're not allowed to do it. A third party, good faith mediator, who wants to help parties resolve a dispute, says, oh, before you come in and you adjudicate the dispute in court, I'll try to help you resolve the dispute. That's wonderful. That's what Aaron HaKohen used to do, says that the Gemara, fine for a third party to do it. But if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you're adjudicating the case, you're the actual judge, you have to decide according to strict justice, Yikov Adin Asahar, let the judgment pierce the mountain, right? You know, if the mountain won't come to Muhammad, whatever. So let the strict justice pierce the mountain. That is the requirement of the Torah, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Osha, Rabbi Yossi Aglili. As Rabbi Willig, you know, said in his description of his experiences dealing with cases of Pshara, he had a case in his shir a few years after I was in the shir, where there was a big dispute. Somebody was doing bookbinding and charging $6 for every single bookbinding, and one person decided to utilize his service, but his book was much more complicated and heavier and thicker and so forth than most of the books, so therefore he charged $8. The person said, I had an expectation of $6. So they convened a Din Torah with three of the Rosh Yeshiva of YU to hear this major dispute, whether it should be $6 or $8. And the Dayan and the Rosh Yeshiva suggested, why don't you make a Pshara? Make a Pshara! $7! Make it $7. And the bookbinder said, no Pshara! wasn't agreeing to a pshara. And as a result, they did not decide according to pshara. They decided according to strict justice, and they ruled in favor of the bookbinder that he should get $8. Okay, so do the parties have the right to say no pshara? That is pshara something that we always impose upon the parties? So that's a question. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Osher, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, certainly not. That's only something we can recommend that they settle between themselves. A third party can recommend that the dayanim have to decide according to strict justice. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karka says, no, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. It's an actual mitzvah. We have a pasuk in Zechariah that says, Emes to Mishpat Shalom shiftu b'shareichem. You should decide cases according to Mishpat Shalom, according to a judgment of peace. Wait a second. But if there's Mishpat, there's no Shalom. If there's strict justice, that's not going to lead to peace, because one party will be very upset. And if there's peace, then it's not going to be Mishpat, because you're not deciding according to strict justice. Rather, what? This is the peanut butter sandwich. The Ezel Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom. What kind of Mishpat also has Shalom? This is what's called Bitsua. Bitsua, the Gemara uses as a synonym for the word pshara. What does bitsua have to do with pshara? Bitsua has to do with breaking things in half. You break things like you break bread. That's the idea of bitsua. So you're just so kind of like you're chiseling away a little bit at the strict justice in order to bring about a peaceful solution. The fact that the Gemara refers to this as a mishpat sheyesh bo shalom, as a mishpat, an actual judgment, something which is in the realm of real din, is the further proof of four of Soloveitchik's thesis that this really has the same stature as an actual strict din judgment that would be handed down by Beis Din. The third opinion is the opinion of really the Tana Kama, which is just one brief line at the top, which is that the Dayanim have the right up until the end of the case to impose a pshara upon the parties, or to convince the parties to agree that the Beis Din should have the authority to decide according to pshara, which means it's a right, but it's not an obligation. The same thing is from Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya says exactly the same thing. The difference between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya is at what point in time does the Beis Din have to abstain from imposing pshara upon the parties? According to Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya, as soon as the Beis Din starts to realize in the direction of which party the decision is going, then they can no longer impose a pshara upon the parties. It's not right for them to say, oh, we want you to agree to pshara, if they have already an inclination of who is correct. And according to the Tana Kama, whom we hold like, no, it's only when they're at the very, very end of the case so that they can no longer push the parties towards pshara. It's not effectively the way in which we hear cases. It's not as if we begin the case with the jurisdiction to only decide according to strict justice, and then during the course of the case, we try to convince the parties to agree to give us the jurisdiction to impose pshara. Generally, we will put in the shtar beruin, in the arbitration agreement that they sign, that they give us the Beis Din, the prerogative to decide the case according to pshara. And that is the halacha. The halacha is like that third opinion, that in accordance with the Tana Kama's version, that the Beis Din has that the Beis Din can only impose pshara if the parties agree to it. That it's not that it's the idea is that it's the parties have the prerogative. However, we also hold, like the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, that it's a mitzvah. Meaning it's not a mitzvah in the sense that we can impose it on the parties against their will, but it's a mitzvah that we very strongly encourage the parties to choose the path of a pshara. What does that mean that we encourage the parties? So we encourage the parties in the following way. If you look at source Yud, at the very beginning of the Din Torah process, mitzvah loma labali dinim batchila, it's a mitzvah to say to them, hadin atem motzim o pshara. Do you want us to decide the case according to strict justice, or would you prefer pshara? Does this sound like we're stating that pshara is the preference? I think in the Torah's version, pshara comes first. The Shulchan Aruch has a din first. So what does that mean? So the Taz says that really, we're just giving them the option. We want them to choose pshara, but we're not pushing it. He quotes the Maharal, source Yud Aleph. From the fact that we ask them, based on the Gemara, do you prefer strict justice or pshara? We don't push it that much. We just offer it to them as an option, but we don't push it. It's not right to push it. Why wouldn't it be right to push it if we think that it's a mitzvah based on tzedek, tzedek, tirtof, echad, the dim, echad, the pshar, v'sisa, yosha, v'yatof, the acronym of Eila, mishpatim, that a judge is supposed to prefer pshara? Why wouldn't we push it? So Rav Soloveitchik explained, as Rav Shechter put it, that the idea of pshara is that if you're going above and beyond the letter of the law, that only works if you're doing it out of the generosity of spirit of your heart. If it's being forced upon you, so that's not really pshara. That's not really going above and beyond the letter of the law. It has to come from your heart. So therefore, it has to be a conscious decision of the parties that they're agreeing to choose pshara. So the Sma goes a little bit further, and we basically hold like the Sma. That's in source you'd base in the bottom of page 2. He says that really the mitzvah, we hold mitzvah b'pshara. We hold that it's correct, like the opinion that, like, certainly we don't impose it upon the parties, but nonetheless, it's a mitzvah that really parties should agree to pshara. So the idea is that we want the dayan to cajole the parties into agreeing to pshara. It's not like a dayan, the hazbir, the bali, didim, pshara, noach lehem. Well, the davir alibam, speak to their hearts that this is a good thing. It's going to lead to greater peace and harmony among men and women if you agree to a pshara. Like the Maharsha says that there is a that when we speak about pshara, achieving peace between the parties, if you just issue a strict judgment, all the lawyers know this, so the parties will always harbor resentment against each other, generally speaking. But if they feel like there was some sort of a compromise that was made, so maybe that will bring their hearts closer together with each other. They will depart as friends, as the Michilta says. It says, v'shapatati ben ish, uvein reyehu. It's a pasuk in Yisro. Well, I'm going to decide cases between a man and his friend, right? So the Michilta says, yeah, ben ish, it's just going to be a regular person if you decide the case according to strict din. You decide according to pshara that you're going to try to work things out and have like a compromise, so then that's going to lead to greater friendships. The Sma says you really are supposed to make a concerted effort to get the parties to agree. Now, again, what are the parties agreeing to? They're agreeing that the Bezdin will have the right to impose this type of a judgment upon them that will be in accordance not just with strict din, but in accordance with the principles of equity and compromise, that they are agreeing to that, but then the Bezdin imposes the decision upon them in the end. So if you look at the Shach in source Yud Gimel, the Shach points out there is another form of pshara. We shouldn't get confused and think that pshara only takes one form. There's the form of pshara which is in the form of a judgment, as the Rav said. It's a judgment which is in the form of a pshara, which is considered to be like a regular decision of the court. It becomes a court of equity on some level. But then there's also the notion of encouraging the parties to negotiate with each other. And that's what the Shach quotes in the name of the Shilti Gibarim. The Shilti Gibarim. The Shach says that when we say that at the end of the case, the Bezdin can no longer impose pshara upon the parties, once the Bezdin is ready to issue a judgment of strict justice, and that the parties have not previously agreed upon pshara, so the Bezdin should not push them anymore at that point in time. So the Shach says that's only with respect to the decision-making aspect of pshara. But with respect to encouraging the parties to work it out between themselves or with a third-party mediator, so the Shilti Gibarim says, Nira be'enai she'en ko advar malala mu'min ka she'dayanam osim lahatu pshara k'piya nira be'enayim. All of this is only when the dayanam are going to impose a pshara, shlomidasa ba'alei dinim, which is going to be an actual decision, which maybe the parties will like, maybe they won't. But if they are explained to the parties that even when the Bezdin is ready to issue a decision, they've already issued a decision, it's still a good idea for them to work out a compromise with each other until they decide on their own that each one is going to give up a little bit of their claim in order to reach a mediated agreement with each other. So then, even after the Bezdin's already issued a decision, that's an appropriate thing to do. We sometimes do that at the Bezdin. will issue a decision, or we'll complete listening to all of the claims of the parties, and we'll say we're going to issue a decision in a week or two or whatever. But in the meantime, if the two of you want to work things out between yourselves, then that would be our greatest preference. Please let us know. We'll give you a week to negotiate. You've heard the arguments from both sides. You've heard some of the weaknesses in your own argument. We can issue a decision. However, why don't you take a week amongst yourselves and see whether you can reach a settlement, and if you can't reach a settlement, and then we'll issue a decision. So that's something which could be done even at the very conclusion of the proceedings. So that's what the Shach quotes in the name of the Shilte HaGiborim. Now, it's very, very interesting because we mentioned that you can't impose upon the parties to choose pshara. In our rules and procedures of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, where the parties sign an arbitration agreement to bring a case in front of us, they agree to abide by our rules and procedures. What do our rules and procedures say? They say that every case that we're going to adjudicate, we're going to adjudicate in accordance with principles of pshara. We're going to decide according to principles of equity and fairness that are mixed together with din. Pshara krova l'din. It's going to be according to strict justice, but taking into account pshara considerations. It's interesting, Rav Asher Weiss, in his comments, said, we've always pushed pshara, and pshara is a great thing, but nowadays, people don't trust Beis Din so much as they used to. So they're afraid that Beis Din's idea of pshara is going to be out of left field entirely, and the decision will be completely out of whack. It might be something totally unfair from their perspective. So they don't necessarily trust Beis Din to come up with the best possible pshara. So therefore, he said, nowadays, it's more important for Beis Din to show that they actually know the halacha, and they're taking the halacha into account in deciding the case. So really, this formula of pshara krova l'din, which is something which is already referenced by the Shmos Yaakov, is something which alleviates that concern, because we're saying, primarily, we're going to base our decision upon the strict halacha, but we're also going to take into account equitable considerations, you know, based on all of the circumstances of the case. So, the Bach has this tremendous Kiddush. I'll take your question in 1 second, Ira. The Bach, in his commentary to the Torah, Kol Shemishpat, says, well, there's a case in the Gemara that indicates that you really can impose pshara upon the parties against their will if one of the parties is much richer than the other party. This is like a little bit troubling because we speak about Bidalo Sedabri Rivo, so where exactly is this coming from? But he says, yeah, Bidalo Sedabri Rivo means that you don't pretend that the poor person is more correct just because he's poor. But that doesn't mean you can't issue a judgment saying, well, really, the rich person is more correct, but we rule that you should give up a little bit of your claim because this party is so poor. So that's not really a false judgment. That's not really the offense of Bidalo Sedabri Rivo. Bidalo Sedabri Rivo means that you give like a false judgment. You say, oh, really, the poor person is more correct? No, poor person is not more correct, but we should give a break to the poor person because he's poor. So says the Bach, that's really something which emerges from a sugya in the Gemara. There's this case that Gemara and Bava Metzia talks about of some porters. These porters were transporting wine for Rabba Baba Chanan, and they were really clumsy. They were very klutzy. Okay, these porters, like, think, you know, Laurel and Hardy or whatever, and they fall, and the barrel breaks, and all the wine comes out, and so forth. So he's really upset at them because he lost, you know, his barrel broke, and he lost all of his wine. So he took, as a payment for the loss that he suffered, he took their coats away from them. So they complained to Rab. They said, this guy, the Rabba Balkan, he took away our coats, and we're cold. We're poor, and we're cold. We can't afford coats. So Rab said, give back their coats. So Rabba Balkan said, is that the din? Am I not entitled to the coats? He said, yeah, that's the din. The Mam Telek B'Derek Tovim quoted a pasuk, I think, in Mishlei. You're supposed to walk in the path of good people. So he gave back the coats. And then they had the audacity of turning to him and saying, we didn't get paid. We worked really hard. We transported, you know, these barrels all day. So what? They broke, you know? So we're clumsy. But we really worked really, really hard the entire time. So give us the money. So Rabbi Bachanan turned to Rab and he said, and Rab said to him, yeah, go give them the money. And he said, is that the din? I have to actually pay them? Not only do I not get to exact payment for the fact that it caused me damage, I have to pay them? So Rav said, yeah, in V'ochos Tzadikim Tishmor, you're supposed to walk in the paths of the righteous. V'ochos Tzadikim. So says the Bach, every time that Rabbi Bar Chanan asked Rav, is this the din? Is this the justice? Is this the law? He said, yes, this is the law. Why would it be the law? It's the opposite of the law. So he says, we see that sometimes the law is that you must follow pshara, even if you haven't agreed to it, because if you're in a much more advantageous position than the other party, you're much more wealthy than the other party, so you have to give them a break. You're supposed to, we require you to act nicely. So, and the Piskei Tshuva notes that a lot of authorities disagree with this bach. It's not the way that is paskin in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch paskins in at the beginning of Simon Yud Beis. Just to turn back for a second to source Yud, the Ramah says Ve'ein Beis Din Yicholim Likalakuf Likanis Lepnimis Shavas. The Din Beis Din can't compel the parties to do this. Even though it appears that this is the right thing to do. The Yesh Cholkem, and he points out that there are those who disagree, like the source quoted by the Bach, the Mordechai, but that the Ramah, whenever the Ramah says there are those who disagree after the first opinion, that means that we hold like the first opinion, not like the second opinion. Rav Soloveitchik explained, why is it that we don't impose pshara? So for the reason that we said, it has to come from the generosity of spirit of the person's own heart. Otherwise, it doesn't count as pshara altogether. It wouldn't be orkos tzadikim if we're imposing it upon the party. But there are authorities that believe that the Bach's opinion should be taken into account. The truth is that the Nemuke Yosef on the Rif, in his girsa of this Gemara in Bava Metzia, where it says, Dina Hachi, he does not have the word in, where Rav said to Rav Baba Chanan, yes, this is the law. So he did not say it's the law. So it's not really the law. It's something a person would have to take that upon themselves. So why is it that the Dayanim really try so hard that we put in our rules and procedures, we're going to decide according to Pshara Klova Ladin, unless the parties insist otherwise? And usually the parties don't insist otherwise because, you know, once you start with a default standard, you're not necessarily going to argue against that standard. So if the parties generally know when they come to Beis Din that the standard is going to include pshara at least on some level, why do we push it so much that we put it even in our rules and procedures? You take a look at source Yud Zayin on the top of page 4. It explains it. Because the Shulchan Aruch itself says, Tzrichan ad-dayam nisrachik b'chol yecholish l'yikabu aleim adun din Torah. Dayanim are supposed to stay away from deciding according to strict justice. Why is that? The Vilna Gaon explains, based on the Yerushalmi, quoting Rabbi Yossi ben Chalavta, because even Rabbi Yossi ben Chalavta, who was a great, you know, Tana, said, we don't know nowadays how to decide cases according to strict justice. We're not knowledgeable about that. What kind of chutzpah do we have as Dayanim as thinking that we have such a great intuition as to what strict justice is? So therefore, it's part of the humility of Dayanim to recognize that they don't have the ability to decide necessarily according to strict justice. And that's another reason why we very much push this idea of pshara. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says Yerushalayim was destroyed because of the insistence of deciding cases according to strict din Torah. The lo adu l'tnim mishura sadim. So it's both a desideratum from the standpoint of the parties and from the standpoint of the Dayanim. We want to foster peaceful relations and good feelings amongst men and women, and we also want the Dayanim to be saved from being placed in the hot spot of having to decide according to strict justice and maybe not getting it right. However, the Sma and others point out, if you look at source called for Aleph over here in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Beis, Amud Beis, there's more to it than that. Pshara isn't only about adjusting the din a little bit based on equitable circumstances. It also means sometimes you can't decide according to strict justice because of the fact that there is no clear halacha in a particular case. We mentioned one version of pshara is splitting a case in half, splitting a claim in half, when both sides seem to have the valid claims to the same item. So we split the money in half. But sometimes we actually also have situations where we have to negotiate, as Rav Asher Weiss puts it, because there isn't like a strong, a clear preference for one person to get a right as opposed to the other. What's the case that the Gemara speaks about? Gemara speaks about, it's not talking about splitting money in half, but just who should have the right to go first. I have two boats that are going through narrow straits, and if they both go through at the same time, one of them is not going to make it because it's narrow straits. One of them is going to be pushed out of the way and they're going to fall over a cliff or something. So we don't want that to happen. The same thing with two camels that are going up a very, very steep hill. If they're both going to go up at the same time, one of them is going to fall. But Moshe Weiss understood the sugi that they're coming from opposite directions. But either way, so how do you decide who's going to get to go first? So the Gemara says, HaKetzad, Tuna v'she'ena tuna, titcha she'ena tuna mipnei tuna. If one of them is carrying a burden and the other isn't, so let the one with the burden go first. Krova v'she'ena krova, one of them has a shorter trip and the other one has a longer trip, so titcha krova mipnei she'ena krova. Hayushtein krovos, let's say that they're both absolutely equal. Shtein v'choko, so they both have the same long journey to go, so there isn't a sense of preferring somebody who has a longer journey. Hatel pshara b'nei. So then make a pshara, say, listen, you guys got to negotiate. One of them will go first, and they'll pay a little bit to the other person for the fact that they got to go before them by a few minutes, even though they both had equal claims. That's also part of the idea of a pshara, is when you're not going to be able to fashion a just solution based on looking at the Shulchan Aruch alone. It's a very famous tshuva of the Rosh, Klaukov Zion Simon Vav, that's so of Sakhov base. It's worth reading, if you have time, reading the whole thing yourself, where the Rush talks about a case where if I was only following strict rules of justice, I would have an unjust result. I have somebody who clearly owes money, but based on Din Torah, he's refusing to open up his mouth, he's pleading the fifth or whatever, he's not being modem mitzvahs to doing anything that would enable us to collect the money from him, but it's clear that the person's story is really, really fishy, and they really owe the money. So the Rosh says, if you look at the Gemara says that you have no right to walk away from a din when it's a din meruma, when it's clear that the result that's going to come out is not going to be a truthful, correct result. So therefore, a dayan, this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Dav Zayin, a dayan has to be lakov lidrosh b'chol minei chakiyus sedrishos hachiyetze adin lamito. The judge has to really penetrate the case as fully as possible in order to bring about the right result, even though according to the claims, the tovea, the plaintiff, might walk away with nothing, but the dayan has to see to it that if they see that the nitba, the person who is the defendant, is acting in a way of prevarication, is acting in a way in which they are simply going to get away with a thievery, nimsa chote nisker, so then the judge has to take it upon himself to decide the case in favor of the plaintiff, despite the fact that the laws of halacha, the evidentiary rules of halacha, have not been fully satisfied. The same way that a dayan has to walk away from a case if he sees that the tovea, the plaintiff, is acting in a way that's deceptive. The plaintiff is bringing witnesses that seem to support his case, but there's something very fishy. So then we say the dayan should just walk away from the case rather than decide according to the plaintiff. By the same, that's the Gemara in Shavuos. By the same token, says the Rosh, the Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying that when you see that the defendant is acting in a way which is very fishy, so and the plaintiff would not otherwise prevail upon a case where the plaintiff deserves to prevail, so then you have to rely upon very strong circumstantial evidence. Even though we normally don't rely upon umdanus, circumstantial evidence, sometimes it's a matter of pshara. It's a very interesting mixture here between the Rosh, here within the Rosh, between the idea of pshara and the idea of umdana, where the Rosh says sometimes pshara means that for the sake of fairness and justice, you have to allow the introduction of umdana, of strong circumstantial evidence, when the evidentiary standards of two kosher witnesses have not otherwise been satisfied, where it looks like a person's going to walk away owing nothing when they're kofir hako, when they're denying everything, where the denial of everything is clearly not warranted. So this halacha of the Rosh, this tshuva of the Rosh is codified in the halacha. If you look at source Chav Gimel, Yesh Korach Lasos, the Dayan Lasos Din Kein Apshara, the Dayan has the right to make a din in accordance with Pshara standards, Makom Shein Adav Yakol Lizbarer. When you're not otherwise able to clarify and elucidate the case according to strict Torah law standards of evidence, so then the Dayan, part of Pshara, is deciding cases according to justice based on utilization of circumstantial evidence and the Dayan's intuition. Sometimes the dayan has to utilize his intuition. Now again, this is one of the, so all, for all of these reasons, we say these types of things don't even require that the parties explicitly agree to pshara, because this type of pshara is incorporated within din. So generally speaking, we say we need a kinyan, that source, that we require in Hilchos Dayanim Siman Yud Beisif Yud Zayin, that we require a kinyan for the parties to sign like an arbitration agreement that they were agreeing to pshara and so forth, in order for the dayanim to have the right to impose it. But in certain cases, like for example, when it's otherwise 50-50, or there is no clear halacha behind a certain situation, or the facts of the case can't really be clarified according to normal evidentiary standards of halacha, so then the halacha itself, the din, requires that pshara actually be utilized. Yes.
Over the objection of the defendant, like the defendant sees, hey, you know, I want to go by strict din because you don't have the right evidence, you won't have enough evidence to convict. So I insist on din. So are you saying that that you don't need the defendant's of consent?
You don't need the defendant's consent. That's exactly what this ma says. When it's this type of a pshara, when it's a type of pshara to simply prevent an abla, to prevent a terrible injustice from occurring, so then that you don't need their specific consent. You would need their consent to adjust what would otherwise be a clear outcome in a case where it's clear that Reuven's entitled to $100, but for the sake of peace and harmony, it's appropriate to deduct it a little bit. Or the case of the porters, where the porters bring a case, so according to most poskim other than the Bach, Rav wouldn't have the right to impose this judgment that Rabbi Baba Kanan would have to pay the porters unless the parties had actually agreed to pshara under the circumstances.
Yeah, but
so,
in
yes.
In that case, it's not that the parties went. Rabbi Baba Kanan said, look, they're saying that they didn't go and say, we want to adjudicate this. Rabbi Baba Kanan went to Rav and said, hey, somebody has a tie on me, what do I do? And he said, this is what I think you should do.
Right, it depends how you interpret the case. So the way the Mordechai interprets the case is that they're talking about din and was an actual adjudication. The way the Mukiyosef would interpret the case is that he was giving him good moral instruction under the circumstances. So how you pass in the halacha depends on how you read the Gemara. Is it an actual adjudication, or is it simply giving good moral advice that you would give under these circumstances?
I guess the follow-up question would be, how far can... Reuven has an employee named Shimon. Mm-hmm. It is found that Shimon is embezzling small, negligible but noticeable amounts of money. Shimon's called to the Beit Din, and he says, yeah, you know what, it was me. I had a medical bill. I needed $3,000 to pay it in order to meet my deductible. Otherwise, I wasn't going to get treatment for my kid, and they weren't going to get this or that. Yeah, you know, I'm falling on my sword here. How far can the Rav and the Beit Din say, okay, you know what, Reuven's worth $1 million. Shimon had to steal a deductible. How far can the Beit Din go in equitizing that claim so as not to whack Shimon over the head?
So it really depends. So if you look in Source Club Bob, so at the Shvus Yaakov, in a famous Shuvah, which we're not going to read inside, but it's the second half of the Piskei Shuvah, which is Source Club Bob, which is on page 6, the Simon Kuf Mem Hey. So what he says is that it depends whether you have a regular pshara or pshara krova ladin. So pshara krova ladin, he says, it has to be in the ballpark of what the decision according to strict Torah law would be, and you can only adjust it by one third. He said that, and there's a sort, and there's a basis for this based on a Gemara and Baba Metzia, Dapa Mem Gimel Amid Beis, that when you're deciding a case of something which is in the ballpark of the halakha, but you're making a little bit of a pshara, so then you can adjust it by one third. You can say Reuven's really entitled to $100. For the sake of pshara, he can only collect $66. So Shimon really has to pay nothing. For the sake of pshara, we'll make Shimon pay $33. And he says that it could be less than that. It could be $1, or we can make it from $100 to $99, depending on the equities of the case and how much of a basis there is to have any sympathy or any type of an acceptance of the claim of the other side is really the losing party. Like, for example, I remember at the Bezdin of America, we once had a severance case where a person was a part-time employee and that they were fired from their job without there being a guarantee that their job would be in perpetuity. It was decided that after 5 years of service, 10 years of service, they wouldn't be asked back for the following year. And they said, I want severance. I want Chodesh Lashana. I want a month for every single year that I worked. And the Bezdin did a very careful investigation into this notion of Chodesh Lashana. Is there such a halacha that if you work for an organization, a school, that you're entitled to 1 month pay for every single year? We found there isn't really such a halacha. It's dependent upon minug. In this particular place, there was no minug, and certainly there was no minug for a part-time employee as opposed to a full-time employee. But the Bezin said at the end, as a matter of pshara, the person put in a lot of years of work. The Sefer HaChinuch says that you're supposed to show appreciation for a long-time worker by giving them something the same the way that we give something to an Eved Ivri when they leave a person's service as Hanaka. So it's not an absolute obligation, but we said, since we have pshara authority, so this is something that we think would be appropriate under the circumstances, but not a Chodesh Lashana. We said $500, some amount that we thought would be appropriate under the circumstances. Just an example of something you might do as a pshara. Or we had a case recently where there was a fight over two children about paying for funeral expenses of a parent. And halakhically speaking, one party made the case that they didn't really have a halakhic obligation because the person was not their halakhic parent. They were raised by the person. They weren't a halakhic parent. They were estranged from this parent for a long time. They didn't get along with the parent, didn't have a good relationship with the parent. We didn't want to get into all the details so much. Halakhically speaking, it was really hard to find the basis to say, api halakha, according to strict din, this child has an obligation to contribute to the funeral expenses. It really was difficult to say that. But as a matter of pshara, we pointed out that it made more sense for this person to pick up the load than to impose it upon the local chesed organization of the community. So as a matter of pshara, we impose a certain amount. Not the full amount that would have otherwise been imposed, but a certain pshara amount. These are things that make a lot of sense for the Bezdin to be able to do if it's empowered to decide according to pshara. So the Shus Yaakov says, pshara kovel adin, you can adjust within one-third. The Divrei Malkiyo, Suas Chavzayan said there's no magical formula of one-third. There was this idea that Rav Moshe Feinstein and others discussed that you might adjust the amount a person's entitled to by a third based on whether they're being rescued from having to take an oath. There was always this idea. If a person would have, according to strict Torah law, been required to take an oath to collect their money, and we say we are not allowing oaths because we don't want people to take oaths on Torah scrolls in Bezdin nowadays. We're afraid people might make a mistake and take a false oath, which would cause the entire world to shake, which we don't want to happen, obviously. So therefore, we exempt people from oaths. But you exempt somebody from an oath, that's worth some money. So say it's worth one-third of what you otherwise would have collected. And so too, if a person otherwise would have taken an oath, would have needed to take an oath to be exempt from the money that is being claimed from them, we say, okay, you would have taken the oath, we're exempting you from the oath, so you have to pay one-third, even though otherwise you would pay zero, you have to pay one-third by virtue of being exempted from the oath. So this is where the one-third idea comes in, sometimes in the context of oaths. So the Divrei Malkiyo says, pshara kovel adin means that as long as the person who's bringing the case gets, if they would be entitled to 100%, if you feel that in order to force their peace and good relations, and I have to tell you, sometimes, especially when we encourage the parties to negotiate between themselves, they'll negotiate in such a way that a person will give up everything they're entitled to, so they'll be able to continue a good business relationship with each other afterwards. For example, if they're going to continue to work with each other, we have that all the time. Sometimes Bezdin has to figure out what's going to be an appropriate remedy so it will be good for the parties in the future. So he says, pshara kovel adin, that could be 51%. It doesn't have to be 67%. It could be 51%. That's still kovel adin, because it's closer to the din than the other way around. If it's regular pshara, it could be exactly the opposite of what the din would be, like the case of Abba Baba Chanan and the porter. So there was a case in the Bati Din in Eretz Yisrael, which is in the source Lamed on page 8, in which they had the following case. There were two parties, and the person who was at the nitba, who was at the who was the defendant, said, and it was like an organization, said that they are prepared. It was like some sort of a major company, a major organization in the Jewish community with lots of money, and they were and there was a claim that was leveled against them, and they said that, we are prepared to sign an arbitration agreement and go in front of the Bezdin, but we're not prepared to say, hein l'din, hein l'pesher, that the Bezdin will decide according to equitable considerations. We want it to be strict justice, because we're afraid equitable considerations will lose something, And if it's strict justice, so then we won't have to pay anything. And Rabbi Eliezer Shapira, who was the Arbezdin of that particular panel, said that in this particular case, he felt that because of the fact that they were a major organization and they had much more money than the other organization, so he felt that under these circumstances, it was appropriate to require the NIPA, it was appropriate to require the defendant to actually sign that they are going to agree to pshara, to equitable considerations based on the Bach. And the other Dayanim were not as sure about that. However, one of the Dayanim said, I'll go along with requiring the party to sign according to pshara, and not based on the fact that you can impose a compromise on the other side, but based on the fact that sometimes the Beis Din is obligated to decide according to pshara if, for example, regular din considerations won't lead to a verdict altogether in the case, like the case of the Rosh. So that was, you know, so based on those considerations, the Beis Din came to the conclusion that it was appropriate to require somebody to sign according to pshara. We never require parties to sign according to pshara. But as I point out, very often the din does incorporate aspects of a pshara, like in the case of the Rush. So it's very interesting, there was a court case called Nyman Ginsburg and Moraines versus Joseph Goldberg, that's source 31. The Beis Din of Beis Yosef of Brooklyn issued a seiruf against the party for refusing to sign an agreement to appear to adjudicate the case in accordance with pshara, in accordance with compromise and equitable considerations. So the party went to court and sued for defamation. Said, I was defamed because I was prepared to sign according to strict din. I just didn't want to decide according to pshara. Take a look. I'm not making this up. And this is, Nyman argues that the seiruf should not have been issued because he appeared at the Beis Din and agreed to submit to its decision if the determination would be based strictly in accordance with law. Reina, I have no idea what that means. Reina din Torah halacha, not in accordance with law or compromise, pshara. He urges under Jewish law he was entitled to demand such a hearing, that he did demand such a hearing, and that the Beis Din refused to decide the case on that basis. And therefore he felt that he was entitled to damages based on defamation. So the decision in the case, not surprisingly, was that this court has no power to review the Beis Din's determination that it was appropriate under Jewish law to issue the seiruf because it's a purely ecclesiastical question that has been decided by the Beis Din in accordance with what it perceives to be Jewish law, correct or not. So I always say, don't make a big deal. I had maybe one case, maybe two cases, in all of my years, 25 years of hearing cases in Beis Din, where a party insisted, no pshara, where they wanted to only sign an arbitration agreement that the Beis Din would decide according to strict din. I said, no sweat. It's not really going to make a difference anyway in most of the cases because of the fact that, generally speaking, when the Beis Din imposes a pshara, it's because the halacha requires a pshara. It's like the two camels that are about to cross a narrow bridge together or go up a steep hill together. It's the two boats that are about to go through narrow straits. Sometimes pshara is incorporated into din, whether the parties like it or not. It's the requirement of the judge just to see to it that difficult cases are given some sort of a resolution based on an evaluation of all the equities of the case. You might have certain cases, like I gave examples, where you would otherwise impose a pshara, and where maybe if it was according to strict din, you won't be able to. But in most cases, there's not going to be such a, in my opinion anyway, there's not going to be such a huge difference. Rozal Menachemya Goldberg Zatzal wrote an article called Shifkei HaPshara, in which he points out that pshara also gives the Beis Din the latitude to be able to award damages if there are, for example, indirect damages. Somebody causes a person damage in an indirect fashion, like, for example, they're fired from a job and as a result they suffer collateral damages. If they were improperly fired, that they're not able to pay their debts on time, and as a result they have more losses that they suffer. And if it's only a remote collateral damages, so we generally are not able, according to halacha, to hold one party responsible for the payment of collateral damages. Or, for example, it's an investment dispute. An investor was given money, and they didn't invest the money properly. And as a result, this person suffered a lot of money. It could be gruma. So, as a general rule, we can't award damages based on gruma. But if parties sign an arbitration agreement, it gives us more latitude, especially in egregious cases, to decide cases according to gruma, or even those cases that might not fall into the category of shlichusayu, where it's not strictly the Bezdin jurisdiction. A person falls into a pit, a pothole, in somebody else's property, right? Or, you know, that was in public property that this person, you know, was responsible for. And according to many authorities, like the Shach, so Bezdin doesn't have, you know, jurisdiction with respect to those types of cases nowadays, so couldn't decide according to the strict measure of damages. But if they sign that Bezdin has authority with respect to Pshara, so these types of claims can be included within Pshara. If you look at the rules and procedures of the Beit Din of America, source 33, so the Beit Din of America defines exactly how they apply Pshara in terms of cases that are submitted to them based on the standard of Pshara Klova Lidzin. And when we adapted our own rules and procedures of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, we incorporated this provision into our own rules and procedures as well. Compromise or settlement related to Jewish law principles, Pshara Klova Lidzin, is a process in which the relative equities of the party's claim are considered in determining the award. For example, in Jewish law, I didn't draft this, the party that proves the truthfulness of its case more likely than not, as well as giving the Jewish law basis for its entitlement, is qualified to recover 100% of the amount sought, whereas in compromise or settlement related to Jewish law principles, Pshara Klova Lidzin, such a party would not necessarily recover 100% of the amount sought, depending on that party's conduct throughout the matter under dispute. So the person really acted in a hideous fashion towards the other party, so maybe you'll subtract a little bit of the claim. I don't know about the way it was described, more likely than not, but maybe that needs to be adjusted a little bit. So too, in a case neither party proves the truthfulness of its case more likely than not, or does not prove the Jewish law basis for its entitlement, Jewish law din would not provide for an award, whereas compromise or settlement related to Jewish law principles could provide for an award in that case. Remedies might also be different in a case governed by the principles of Pshara, insofar as an award could require a public apology or other remedies not required in Jewish law. Like, for example, we heard a defamation case where we required both parties to issue letters of apology to each other. That's not necessarily something that comes out of strict din, but if you have Pshara jurisdiction, so those are types of remedies that you're able to give, and sometimes it really helps to bring about a greater sense of shalom, of harmony between the parties. And then it gives various things that are not taken into account, various factors not taken into account, even when a case is decided according to Pshara, are levels of religiosity, and that's very important to broadcast to parties nowadays, that they shouldn't think that Beis Din is going to be more favorable to one party because they have a bigger black hat, you know, than the other party, or a bigger yarmulke than the other party, or a yarmulke altogether, right? Relative wealth of the party, so clearly the Beis Din of America paskins against the Bach, or gender, and certainly gender should not be a consideration. And it's the policy of the Beis Din to encourage the parties to adjudicate matters in accordance with Pshara, in our case Pshara Klova Lidzin. And of course, parties can also decide that they're just going to decide according to Pshara alone. It's very interesting because the Rambam, when he's explaining why it is that Maseches Avos comes in the heels shortly after Maseches Sanhedrin and Makos and, you know, those Maseches that deal with all of these laws of Jewish jurisprudence. So he says it's in order to stress that the Dayan has to act in accordance with certain ethical standards when a Dayan is adjudicating a case, and those ethical standards are spelled out in Pirkei Avos. I think in the end of his comments here, he's referring to the Mishnah that says that a person is chosech atzmo min adin, that a Dayan who makes sure to refrain from deciding cases according to strict justice, porik menu eva v'gezo, is able to stay away from hatred because you force their harmony amongst people, and gezo because if it's strict justice, maybe you're deciding, you know, wrong, and as a result, it's going to be really theft from a party. So the Rambam says, what is one of the ways in which a Dayan acts in a morally upright fashion? The Yinag Rav Dina B'derech HaPshara, to generally try to do things in accordance with this standard of pshara, of equity, fairness, and so forth, whether it's in terms of getting the parties to agree that that's going to be the standard of law, or to get the parties to mediate and negotiate a settlement between themselves, perhaps with the facilitation of the Bezdin. From Yukal Adayin, the Fashib and Yeribim Tamin, if the Bezdin is able to broker settlement between the parties all the time, below Yifsav Din Klal, and I have to issue a decision in all Harezeh Meshubach, this is considered to be praiseworthy. And in the first instance, whenever parties come to us at the Bezdin, we try to broker a settlement truthfully between the parties. And only when that's not feasible for whatever reason do we actually adjudicate the case. And even then, we try to make sure to adjudicate in accordance with principles of Pshara, or at least of Pshara Krova Ladin. And we'll stop here.
Thank you.